The Radio Effect Players presents A Christmas Carol by Sir Charles Dickens's When Scrooge awoke, it was so dark that looking out of bed he could scarcely distinguish the transparent window from the opaque walls of his chamber. He was endeavouring to pierce the darkness with his ferret eyes when the chimes of a neighbouring church struck the four quarters. So he listened for the hour. To his great astonishment, the heavy bell went on from 6 to 7 and then from 7 to 8 and regularly up until 12, then stopped. 12? It was past 2 when he went to bed. The clock was wrong. An icicle must have gotten into the works. 12. He touched the spring of his repeater to correct this most preposterous clock. Its rapid little pulse beat 12 and stopped.
Why, it isn't possible,
said Scrooge,
that I can have slept through a whole day and fired to another night. It isn't possible that anything has happened to the sun, and that it is 12 o'clock noon.
The idea being an alarming one, he scrambled out of bed and groped his way to the window. He was obliged to rub the frost off with the sleeve of his dressing gown before he could see anything, and then he could see very little. All he could make out was that it was still very foggy. And extremely cold, and that there was no noise of people running to and fro and making a great stir, as there unquestionably would have been if night had beaten off bright day and taken possession of the world. This was a great relief, because 3 days after the sight of the first exchange to pay Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge or his order and so forth would have become a mere United States security, if there were no days to count by. Some of these just have to get through and just say the word settle.
Yes, I don't.
I know you don't, I do. Don't understand them. Scrooge went to bed again, and thought, and then thought, and thought it over and over and over, and could make nothing of it. The more he thought, the more perplexed he was. And the more he endeavoured not to think, the more he thought. Man, his ghost bothered him exceedingly. Every time he resolved it with himself, after mature inquiry, that it was all a dream, his mind flew back again, and like a strong spring released to its first position, and presented the same problem to be worked all through. Was it a dream or was it not? Scrooge lay in the state until the chime had gone 3 quarters more, when he remembered, on a sudden, that the ghost had warned him of a visitation when the bell tolled 1. He resolved to lie awake until the hour was past, and considering that he could no more go to sleep than go to heaven, this was perhaps the wisest resolution in his power. The quarter was so long that he was more and more convinced that he must have sunk into a daze unconsciously and missed the o'clock. At length it broke upon his listening ear.
Ding dong.
1:15,
said Scrooge, counting.
Ding dong.
1:30,
said Scrooge.
Ding dong.
1:15, said Scrooge.
Ding dong.
The hour itself,
said Scrooge triumphantly.
And nothing else.
He spoke before the hour bell sounded, which it now did with a deep, dull, hollow, melancholy one bong. Light flashed up in the room upon an instant, and the curtains of his bed were drawn. The curtains of his bed were drawn aside, I tell you, by a hand. Not the curtains at his feet, nor the curtains at his back, but those which his face was addressed. The curtains of his bed were drawn aside, and Scrooge, staring up at a half-recumbent attitude, found himself face to face with the unearthly visitor who drew them. As close to you it knew, I've gone fun. As close to it as I am to you now. And I'm right here. Sorry. It was a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child, like an old man, viewed through some supernatural medium, which gave him an appearance of having receded from view and being diminished to a child's proportions. Its hair, which hung about its neck and down its back, was white as if with age, and yet the face had not a wrinkle, and the tenderness bloom was on the skin. The arms were very long and muscular, the hands the same as if... excuse me. As if its hold were in of uncommon strength. Its legs and feet, most delicately formed, were, like those upper members, bare. It wore a tunic of the purest white, and round its waist was bound a lustrous belt, the sheen of which was beautiful. It held a branch of freshly green holly in its hand, and in singular contradiction of its winter emblem, its dress was trimmed with summer flowers. But the strange thing about it was that from the crown of its head there sprung a bright, clear jet of light, by which all of this was visible, and which was doubtless the occasion of its... using, in its most duller moments, a great extinguisher for a cap, which it now held under its arm. What? What does that mean, says Cecil?
I think it's like a candle snuffer thing, but bigger.
Oh, I see. There. Even this, though when Scrooge looked at it with an increasing steadiness, was not its strangest quality. For its belt sparked and glittered now in one part and now in another, and what was once light in an instant was now dark in another. Oh, excuse me, I'm just playing with some Velcro there. So the figure itself fluctuated on its distinctness, now being a thing with one arm, now with one leg, now with 20 legs, now a pair of legs without a head, now a head without a body, of which dissolving parts no outline could be visible in the dense gloom wherein they melted away. And in the very wonder of this, it would be itself again, distinct and clear as ever.
I am the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me,
asked Scrooge.
I am.
The voice was soft and genital, singularly low. Pastor Dave, singularly low. He was just looking at me. Singularly low, as if, instead of it being so close beside him, it were a distance. Oh, I see, you're going for meaning distinctly low, as in volume rather than... note pitch. Just staring at me. They're all just staring at me. Sorry.
Who and what are you? Scrooge demanded.
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
Inquired Scrooge, observant of its dwarfish stature.
No, your past.
Perhaps Scrooge could not have told anybody why, if anybody would have asked him, but he had a special desire to see the spirit in his cap, and begged him to cover his head up.
What?
Exclaimed the ghost.
Would you soon so put out with worldly hands the light I give? Is it not enough that you are one of those whose passion made this cap and forced me through the whole trains of years to wear it upon my brow?
Scrooge reverently disclaimed by all intentions to offend or any knowledge of having willfully bonneted the spirit at any period of his life. Then he made the bold inquiry to what business brought him here. To which the ghost replied,
"Your welfare."
Scrooge expressed a boom, 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 boom. Scrooge expressed himself with much obliged, but could not help thinking that a night of unbroken rest would be more conducive to that end. The spirit must have heard him thinking it, for it immediately said,
"Your reclamation, then, take heed."
It put out a strong arm as it spoke and clasped him gently by the arm.
"Rise and walk with me."
It would have been in vain for Scrooge to plead that the weather or the hour were not adapted to pedestrian purposes. The bed was warm and the thermometer a long way below freezing, and that he was clad in but lightly, and that he was clad but lightly in his slippers, dressing gown, and also his nightcap, and that he had a cold upon him at the time. The grasp, though gentle as a woman's hand, was not to be resisted. He rose, but finding that the spirit made towards the window, he clasped his robe in supplication.
"I'm a mortal,"
Scrooge remonstrated,
"and liable to fall."
"Bear but a touch of my hand there,"
said the spirit, laying its hand upon his heart,
"and you shall be upheld in more than this."
As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall and stood upon an open country road, with fields on either hand. The spirit had... The city had entirely vanished. Not a vestige of it was to be seen. The darkness and the mist had vanished with it, for it was clear, cold, and a winter's day, with snow upon the ground. "That's like now, Cecil."
"Yes, yes, there's beauty outside."
"Good heavens,"
said Scrooge, clasping his hands together as he looked about him.
"I was bred in this place. I do know this. I was a boy here."
The spirit gazed upon him mildly. "Mum, he's doing something mild."
"Shut up."
Its gentle touch, though it had been light and instantaneous, appeared still present to the old man's sense of feeling. He was conscious of 1,000 odours floating in the air. He was conscious of 1,000 odours floating in the air, each one connected with 1,000 thoughts and hopes and joys and cares, all long, long forgotten.
"Your lip is trembling,"
said the ghost.
"What is that upon your cheek?"
Scrooge muttered with an unusual catching in his voice that it was a pimple, and begged the ghost to lead him where he would.
"You recollect the way?"
"Remember it?"
cried Scrooge with a fever.
"I could walk out of blindfold."
"Strange to have forgotten it for so many years, so,"
observed the ghost.
"Let us go on."
They walked along the road. Was it yellow bricked? Nobody knows. Scrooge recognised every gate and post and tree until a little market town appeared in the distance, with its bridge, its church, and winding river. Some shaggy ponies now were trotting towards them with boys upon their backs, who called to other boys in the country gigs and carts. Might be jigs, actually, Cecil. What do you think?
What?
What are you doing?
I'm watching TikToks.
Oh, yeah. He's looking at videos of clocks on YouTube. I don't think that's what TikToks mean, Cecil.
No, I'm not bothered.
Okay, sorry. But where were we? What were we doing? Oh, yeah, Scrooge. All these boys were in great spirits and shouted at each other until the broad fields were so full of merry music that the crisp air laughed to hear it.
"These are but shadows of things that already have been,"
said the ghost.
"They have no consciousnesses of us."
The jocund travellers came upon them, and as they came, Scrooge knew and named every single one. Why, he was rejoiced beyond all bounds to see them. Why did his cold eyes glisten and his heart leap up as they went past? Why was he filled with gladness when he heard them give each other a Merry Christmas as they parted across roads and byways for their several homes? What was a Merry Christmas to Scrooge? Out upon Merry Christmas? What good has it ever done him?
The school is not quite deserted.
Deserted, Pastor Dave.
Oof, staring at me.
The school is not quite deserted,
said the ghost.
A solitary child, neglected by his friends, is still there.
Scrooge said he knew it, and he sobbed. They left the high road by a well-remembered lane and soon approached a mansion of dull red brick with a little weathercock surmounted cupola on the roof and a bell hanging on it. Anybody know what that means?
Yes.
You want to tell me?
No.
Fair enough. There. It was a large house, but one of broken fortunes, for the spacious offices were little used, and their walls were damp and mossy, their windows broken, and their gates decayed. Fowls clucked and strutted in the stables, and the coach houses and sheds were overrun with grass. Nor was it more of its ancient state. Within, for entering the dreary hall and glancing through the open doors of many rooms, they found themselves poorly furnished, cold and vast. There was an earthy savour in the air, a chilly bareness in the place, which associated itself somehow with too much getting up by candlelight and not too much to eat. They went, the Scrooge and Ghost, no, the Ghost and Scrooge, across all to a door at the back of the house. It was opened before them and disclosed a long, bare, melancholy room, made barer by the lines of plain deal forms and desks. At one of these... that was fun. At one of these, a lonely boy was reading near a feeble fire. And Scrooge sat down upon a form and wept to see his poor forgotten self, as he used to be. Not a latent echo in the house, not a squeak and scuffle from the mice behind the panelling, not a drip from the half-thawed waterspout. What is a waterspout? I must look that up one day. In the dull yard behind. What?
I didn't say anything.
Oh. Samuel. Not a sigh amongst the leafless boughs of a once despondent poplar, nor the idle swinging of an empty storehouse door. No, not a crackling in the fire, but fell upon the heart of Scrooge, excuse me, with a softening influence, and gave a freer passage to his tears. The spirit touched him on the arm and pointed to his younger self, intent upon reading. Suddenly a man in foreign garments, wonderfully real and distinct to look at. Oh,
what's happened? I've dropped the phone. There was a spooky clock. Let me have someone pick it up for me.
There you go, that's all.
Thank you.
Can you not be playing on your phone while we're doing this radio broadcast? Sorry about that, where were we? The spirit touched him on the arm and pointed to his younger self, intent upon his reading. Suddenly a man in foreign garments, wonderfully real and distinct to look at, stood outside the window. Is he going to do a pervert look at the little boy? He had with an axe stuck in his belt, and leading by the bridle an ass laden with wood.
Why, it's Ali Baba.
We gone into pantomime? Oh no, Scrooge exclaimed in ecstasy.
Is dear old Ali Baba? Yes, I know.
One Christmas time, when yonder solitary child was left here all alone, he did come, and for the first time, just like that. Poor boy. And Valentine, said Scrooge, with his difficult, confusing speech. And his wild brother, Orson. There they go. Oh. And what was his name? Who was put down in his drawers asleep at the gates of Damascus? Don't you see him? And the Sultan's groom turning upside down by the Gemini. There's upon his head. Serves him right, and I'm glad of it. What business had he to marry the princess?
Yeah, I don't know either. To hear Scrooge expanding on all the earnestness of his nature on such subjects in a most extraordinary voice between laughing and crying, Sir Jeremy.
I didn't read that bit.
And to see his heightened and excited face would have been a surprise to his business friends in the city. Indeed.
There's the parrot, cried Scrooge. Green body and yellow tail, with a thing like lettuce growing up on top of its head. There he is. Poor Robinson Crusoe, we called him. When he came home after sailing round that island, poor Robinson Crusoe. Where have you been, Robinson Crusoe? The man thought he was dreaming, but he wasn't. It was the parrot, you know. There he goes. Friday. Running for his life up the little creek. Hello, Hoop, hello.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Look, it's old, it's Dickensian, Paul. They spoke differently.
All right, same about that. Then, with a rapidity of transition very foreign to his usual character, he said, in pity of his former self,
poor boy.
And Scrooge cried again.
I wish,
Scrooge muttered, putting his hands in his pockets and looking about him after drying his eyes with his cuff.
But it's too late now.
What's the matter?
Asked the spirit.
Nothing,
said Scrooge.
Nothing. There was a boy singing a Christmas carol at my door last night. I should have given him something. That's all.
The ghost smiled thoughtfully and waved its hand, saying, as it did so,
let us see another Christmas.
Scrooge's former self grew larger at the words, and the room became a little darker and a little more dirty. The panels shrunk, the windows cracked, fragments of plaster fell off the ceiling, and the naked lathes, when there, were showing instead. But how was all of this brought about, Scrooge knew no more than you do, because we're all ignorant. He only knew that it was quite correct, that everything had happened so, and that there he was, alone again, when all the other boys had gone home for the jolly holidays. He was not reading now, but walking up and down despairingly. Scrooge looked at his ghost, with a mournful shaking of his head, glancing anxiously towards the door. It opened, and a little girl much younger than the boy came darting in and put her arms around his neck, and often kissing him, addressing him as her dear, dear brother. I have come to bring you home, dear brother, said the child, clasping her tight. Excuse me. I have come to bring you home, dear brother, said the child, clasping her tiny hands and bending down to laugh. Bring you home, home, home.
Oh, home, little Fran,
returned the boy, who was a small Scrooge, but still had the voice of an adult, Sir Jeremy.
I will not lower myself to raise or lower my voice. I believe Scrooge's voice was the same his entire age, much like mine. Even when I was 4 years old, I spoke like this. I would say, hello, father, hello, mother. I'm home from kindergarten. Thank you very much. I'll see you after Easter, and I'll go on an Easter egg hunt.
Really?
Yes. Home, little Fran,
returned the boy. Yes, said the child, brimful with glee. Home for good and all that.
Home forever and ever and ever. Father's so much kinder than he used to be. That home is like heaven. He spoke so gently to me the other dear night. No, he does say that. I thought I tripped up, but I didn't. He spoke so gently to me one dear night when I was going to bed that I was not afraid to ask him once more if he might come home. And he said, yes, you should, and sent me in a coach to bring you. You to be a man, said the child, opening her eyes. And you're never to come back here. But first, we're going to be together all Christmas long and have the simply merriest of times.
You're quite a woman, little Fran, exclaimed the boy.
She clapped her hands and laughed and tried to touch his head, but being too little, laughed again and stood on tiptoes to embrace him. Then she began to drag him, in a childish eagerness, towards the door, and he...
oh, sorry,
the burped. And he, nothing loth to go, accompanied her. A terrible voice in the hall cried,
bring down Master Scrooge's box there!
Thank you, Tony.
You're welcome.
And in the hall appeared the schoolmaster himself, who glared on Master Scrooge with a ferocious condescension and threw him into a dreadful state of mind by shaking hands with him. He then conveyed him and his sister to the veriest old well of a shivering best parlour that he'd ever seen, you know. There were maps upon the wall and the celestial and terrestrial globes in the window. They were waxy with cold. Here he produced a decanter of curiously light wine and a block of curiously heavy cake, and administered instalments of those dainties upon the young people, at the same time sending out a meagre servant to offer a glass of something to the postboy, who answered that he thanked the gentleman, but if it was all the same, he'd tasted it before he'd rather not. Not sure what that means. Master Scrooge's trunk being by this time tied on the top of the chassis, the children bade... excuse me, I shouldn't have drunk that coffee. The children bade the schoolmaster a goodbye, right willingly, and getting in, drove gaily down the garden sweep. Should have got a translated version for, like, modern times. It'd just be like, they got in car and drove off. None of this flowery... florid words. Sorry. The quick wheels dashing the hoarfrost and snow from the dark leaves of the evergreens like spray.
Always a delicate creature whom a breath might have withered,
said the ghost.
But she had a large heart.
So she had, said Scrooge. You're right. I will not say against it, spirit. God forbid I shall not.
She died a woman,
said the ghost,
and had, I think, children.
Yes, one child,
Scrooge returned.
True,
said the ghost.
Your nephew.
Scrooge seemed uneasy in his mind and answered only briefly.
Yes.
Although they had but that moment left the school behind them, they were now in the busy thoroughfares of a city, where shadowy passengers passed and repassed, where shadowy carts and coaches battled for the way, and all the strife and tumultuousness of a real city were. It was made plain enough by the dressing of the shop that here too it was Christmas time again. But it was the evening, and the streets were lightened up. The ghost stopped at a certain warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it.
Know it?
Said Scrooge, spitting on me slightly.
Sorry.
Sorry.
I was apprenticed here.
They went in, and at the sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig, sitting behind such a high desk that if he'd been 2 inches taller, he must have knocked his head against the ceiling. Scrooge cried with excitement.
As I say, it's old Fezziwig, Oh, bless his heart, Fezziwig's alive again.
Old Fezziwig laid his pen down and looked at the clock, which pointed to the hour of 7. He rubbed his hands, adjusted his capacious waistcoat, laughed all over himself, from his shoes to his organ of benevolence.
I say, Paul, I've got an organ of benevolence right here.
Don't touch your genital.
What? Woof.
No, please don't do that. Fezziwig called out in a comfortable, oily, rich, fat, jovial voice.
You're all there, please, Dick.
Scrooge's former self, now a grown young man, came briskly in, accompanied by his fellow apprentice.
Dick Wilkins, to be sure,
said Scrooge to the ghost.
Bless me, there he is. He was very much attached to me, was Dick. Poor Dick. Dear, dear.
Oh, you're all the boys,
said Fezziwig.
No more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Dick. Christmas Eve, Ebenezer. Let's have the shutters cried up,
shouted old Fezziwig with a sharp clasp of his hands.
Before the man can say Jack Robinson.
He said Ebenezer, Fezziwig, sorry about that. You wouldn't believe how those two fellas went at it. They were charging up the street with the other shutters, 1, 2, 3, add them up in the place, 4, 5, 6, barred them and pinned them, 7, 8, 9, and came back before you could have got to 12, panting like racehorses.
Billy Ho!
Cried old Fezziwig, skipping down from his high desk with a wonderful agility.
Clear away, my lads. Let's have a lot of movement here. Ilio, Dick, cheerio, Pembrazer.
I'm light-headed. Clear away, there was nothing they wouldn't have cleared away. Or couldn't have cleared away with old Fezziwig looking on. It was done in a minute. Every movable blah, 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 was packed off as if it were dismissed from public life forevermore. The floor was swept and watered. The lamps were trimmed. Fuel was heaped on the fire, and the warehouse was as snug, warm and dry, and bright as a ball. Room, sorry, as you would have desired to see upon any winter's night. In came a fiddler with music book, and went up to the lofty desk, and made an orchestra of it, and turned like 50 stomach aches. I don't know what that means. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast substantial smile. In came 3 Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable. In came 6 young followers whose heart they'd broken. coffee. Sorry about that. In came all the young dudes and women employed in the business. In came the housemaids with her cousin, the baker. In came cook with a brother in particular. In came the milkman. In came the boy from over the way, who was suspected of not having board enough from his master, trying to hide himself behind the girl from next door but one, who provided to have her ears pulled by her mistress. In they came, one after the other, some shyly, some boldly, some gracefully, some awkwardly, some pushing, some pulling. In they all came, anyhow and everyhow. Away they all went, 20 couples at once. Bloody hell. Hands half round the back again. Down the middle and up again. Jesus Christ. It's his birthday eve. Round and round various stages of affectionate groupings. This is just bloody filthy. Just a mass orgy at Fezziwig's fuck palace. Ball. Sorry.
If I have to tell you one more time, Paul, please keep this professional. We're hoping to get an audible deal out of this.
Sorry. Okay, where are we? There were lots of people, basically. I've lost myself. When this result was brought about, old Fezziwig, clapping his hands to stop the dance, cried out,
"Well done!"
And the fiddler plunged his hot face into a hot pot of porter, especially provided for that purpose. Olden times, again, challenging. We don't know what some of this stuff means. I'm sure if you got a book, you could look it up or go on the internet, but you'll soon get distracted by pictures of kittens, I imagine. But scorning rest upon his reappearance, he instantly began again, fiddling with himself, no doubt. Though there were no dances yet, as if the other fiddler had been carried home, exhausted, on a shutter, and he were a brand new man resolved to beat himself out of sight, or perish. There were more dances, and there were more forfeits, and more dances, and there was cake, and there was negus. Wonder what that is. Someone from Walking Dead, isn't it? And there was a piece of cold roast, and there was a great piece of cold boiled. Cold boiled, whatever that means. And there were mince pies, and plenty of beer. But the great effect of the evening came after the roast and boiled, when the fiddler, an artful dog mind, the sort of man who knew his business better than you or I could have told him, struck up Sir Roger de Coverley. Then old Fezziwig stood out on the dance floor with Mrs. Fezziwig. Top couple, too, with a good stiff piece of work cut out for them. 3 or 4 or 20 pairs of partners, people who were not to be trifled with, people who would dance and had no notion of walking. You can just imagine it now, can't you? Lots of Dickensian people stood in a hall, all doing that sort of posh dance where they change partners. It's quite sexy. Like an early key party. Sorry. But if there'd been twice as many, 4 times as many, old Fezziwig would have been a match for all of them. So would Mrs. Fezziwig. As to her, she was worthy to be his partner in every sense of the term. And if that's not high praise, tell me higher, and I'll use it. A positive light appeared to issue from Fezziwig's calves. They shone in every part of the dance like moons. You couldn't have predicted, at any given time, what would have become of them next, and when old Fezziwig and Mrs. Fezziwig had all gone through the dance, advanced and retired, both hands to your partner, bow and curtsy corkscrew, thread the needle back and forth, Fezziwig cut so deftly that he appeared to wink with his legs, and came upon his feet again without a stagger. When the clock struck 11, this domestic ball broke up. Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig took their stations, one on either side of the door, and shaking hands with every person individually, as he or she went out, and they wished them a Merry Christmas. When everyone had retired, but the two apprentices, and that's prentices, not apprentices, don't know why, but that's just how it's written, and if anybody knows, it's Sir Charles Dickens's. So, when everybody had retired but the two prentices, they did the same to them, and thus the cheerful voices died away, and the lads were left to their beds, which were under the counter at the back of the shop. Ugh. Imagine sleeping where you worked. Like COVID, you just get out of bed. You're at work because you're working from home. And by working from home, I mean spending all morning in your bed.
Paul.
Sorry. During the whole of this time, Scrooge had acted like a man out of his wits. His heart and soul were in the scene. With his former self, also. He corroborated everything, remembered everything, enjoyed everything, and underwent the strangest of agitations. It was not until now, when his bright faces of his former self and Dick were turned from them, that he remembered the ghost and became conscious that it was looking full upon him, while the light upon his head burned very clear.
"A small matter,"
said the ghost,
"to make these silly folk so full of gratitude."
"Small,"
echoed Scrooge. The spirit signed... Excuse me, I thought I was going to sneeze, I didn't. The spirit signed him to listen to the two apprentices, who were pouring out their hearts in praise of Fezziwig, and when he had done so, said,
"Why, is it not? He has spent but a few pounds of your immortal money, 3 or 4 perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves this praise?"
"It isn't that,"
said Scrooge, heated by the remark and speaking unconsciously like his former, not his latter self.
"It isn't that, Spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our services light or burdensome, a pleasure or even a toil. Say that power..." "What?"
"So Jeremy's gone wrong. He didn't know the words. You're a Wally."
"Piss off."
"No. Go on, get back into your meagre, little delicate voice, Sir Jeremy. Yeah. Scrooge has been like his old former self."
"Shut up. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant that it is impossible to add and count them up. Then what? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune."
He felt the spirit's glance and stopped.
"What's the matter?"
asked the ghost.
"Nothing in particular,"
said Scrooge.
"Oh, something, I think,"
said the ghost insistently.
"No, I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now, that's all."
His former self turned down the lamp as he gave utterance to the wish, and Scrooge and the ghost stood side by side in the open air.
"My time grows short,"
observed the spirit.
"Quick."
This was not addressed to Scrooge or to anyone whom he could see, but it produced an immediate effect, for again Scrooge saw himself. He was older now, a man in the prime of his life. His face had not the harsh and rigid lines of late years, but had begun to wear the signs of care and avarice. There was an eager, greedy, restless motion in his eyes, which showed the passion that he had taken root, and the shadows of the growing tree that would fall. He was not alone, but sat by the side of a fair young girl in a mourning dress. A mourning dress, sir. In whose eyes there were tears which sparkled in the light that shone of the ghost's Christmas past's head.
"It matters little,"
she said softly.
"To you, very little. Another idol has displaced me. And if it can cheer you and comfort you in time to come, as I would have tried to, I've had no cause to grieve."
"What idol has displaced you?"
he rejoined.
"A golden one."
"This is the even-handed dealing of the world,"
he said.
"There's nothing on which it's so hard as poverty, and there's nothing it professes to condemn with such severity as the pursuit of wealth."
"You fear the world too much,"
she answered gently.
"All your other hopes have merged into the hope of being beyond the chance of its sordid reproach. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off one by one until the master passion, gain, engrosses you. Have I not?"
"Well, what then?"
he retorted.
"Even if I have grown so much wiser, what then? I'm not changed towards you."
She shook her head.
"Am I?"
"Our contract is an old one. Oh, I'm a woman. It was made when we were both poor and content to be so. Until, in good season, we could improve our worldly fortune by your Afghan-American."
"Sorry. We could improve our worldly fortune..." Turned into a goat now. "Sorry, I'm ruining the scene for you, Sir Jeremy."
"Nope. Oof.
Our contract was an old one. It was made when we were both poor and content to be so, until in good season we could improve our worldly fortune by our patent industry. You are changed. When it was made, you were another man.
I was a boy,
he said impatiently.
Your own feelings tell you that you are not what you are,
she returned.
I am. That which promised happiness when we were once in young heart is fraught with misery now that we are two. How often and how keenly have I thought of this? I will not say that to you. It is another that I have thought of, though, and can release you.
Have I ever sought release?
In words, no, never.
Then what?
Please stop spitting on my cheek.
Nope. I say again to you, in what then have I changed?
In a changed nature, in an altered spirit, in another atmosphere of life, another hope, Caroline, in everything that made my love of any worth or value in your sight. If this had never been between us,
said the girl, looking mildly but with steadiness upon him.
Tell me, would you seek me out to win me now? Oh, no.
He seemed to yield to the justice of the supposition, in spite of himself. But he said with a struggle,
You think not?
Well, I would gladly think otherwise if me and my bosoms could,
she answered.
Heavens to Betsy knows, when I have learned a truth like this, I know how strong and irresistible it must be. But if you were free today, tomorrow, yesterday, can I believe that you would choose a dowerless girl? All night, albeit with ginormous knockers.
Paul,
sorry.
Excuse me. You who, in your very confidence with her, weighs everything by gain or choosing her, if for a moment you were false enough to your once get.
What was that?
I think the snow falling off the roof.
No heck. Sliding down the roof like Santa's just had a heart attack coming down chimney. Terrifying nonsense. What was it saying?
I don't know, you're blabbering on about some woman's bullshit. This has happened to me quite often, actually. I met a fella, get to know her, and then she says I care too much about my money, properties, and assets. I say, well, there's only two assets I really care about on you, woman. Now pop the top off.
All right, Sir Jeremy, please don't. Look, I'm going back to it now.
I release you from your contract with a full heart for the love of him I knew you once were.
He was about to speak, but with her head turned from him, she resumed. God, she goes on, don't she? No wonder he's had enough of her.
You may. The memory of what is past half makes me hope you will have pain in this. A very, very brief time, and you will dismiss the recollection of it gladly as an unprofitable dream from which it happened to well you have woken. May you be happy in your life, the life you have chosen.
And she left him, and they parted.
Spirit,
said Scrooge, a tear in his face.
No, show me no more. Conduct me home. Why do you delight in torturing me so?
One shadow more,
exclaimed the ghost.
No more, I don't wish to say it. Show me no more, please.
But the relentless ghost pinioned him. Pinioned him in both his arms and forced him to observe what happened next. They were in another scene and another place, in a room not very large or handsome, but full of comfort. Near to the winter's fire sat a beautiful young girl, so like that last Scrooge believed it was the same. Until he saw her. Now a comely matron, sitting opposite her daughter. The noise in this room was perfectly tumultuous, for there were more children in there than Scrooge in his agitated state of mind could count. And, unlike the celebrated herd in the poem, there were not 40 children conducting themselves like one, but every child was conducting itself like 40. The consequences were uproarious beyond belief, but no one seemed to care. On the contrary, the mother and daughter laughed heartily and enjoyed it very, very much. And the latter soon began to mingle into the sports, got pillaged by the other young brigands more ruthlessly. What would I not have given to be one of them? Rather you than me, Charles Dickens. Though I never could have been so rude, oh no, no, no. I wouldn't for the wealth in all the world have been crushed that braided hair and torn it down for the ferocious little shoe. I wouldn't have plucked it off, God bless my soul, to save my life. As to the measuring her waist in sport, as they did, bald young brood, I could have done it. Oh, my goodness. Okay, here we go. I should have expected my arm to have grown round it for a punishment and never come straight again, and yet I should have dearly liked to, I own, to have touched her lips and have questioned her that she might have opened them to have... to have looked upon the lashes of her downcast eyes and never raised a blush, to have let loose waves of hair in an inch of which would be a keepsake beyond price. In short, I should have liked to, I do confess, to have had the lightest license of a child, and yet to have been man enough to know its value. Again, Dickensian, old, some of it's a bit of bollocks. Anyway, sorry about that. But now a knocking at the door was heard, and such a rush immediately ensued that she, with a laughing face and plundered dress, was borne towards it in the centre of a flushed and boisterous group, just in time to greet the father, who came home attended by a young man laden with Christmas toys and presents. Then the shouting and the struggling and the onslaught that was made in deference of the porter. Okay. The scaling of him with chairs for ladders to dive into his pockets, despoil him of brown paper parcels, hold on tight by his cravat and hug him round his neck, pommel his back and kick his legs in affection. The shouts of wonder and delight with which the development of every package was received, the terrible announcement that the baby had been taken in the act of putting a doll's frying pan into its mouth, and that was more suspected of having swallowed a fictitious turkey glued onto a wooden platter, the immense relief on finding this false alarm, the joy, the gratitude, the ecstasy. They are all indescribable alike. No, you just described them though. It is enough that by degrees the children and their emotions got out of the parlour and by one stair at a time up to the top of the house, where they all went to bed, and so the horrifying, screeching, wailing noise of 40 awful, snot-filled children subsided. What?
Stop adding stuff.
And now Scrooge looked more attentively than ever, when the master of the house, having his daughter lean fondly on him, sat down with her and the mother at his own fireside. And when he thought that such another creature, quite as graceful and full of promise, might have called him father, and been a springtime in the haggard winter of his life, his sight grew very dim indeed.
"Well,"
said the husband, turning to his wife with a smile,
"I saw an old friend of yours this afternoon."
"Who was it?"
"Well, guess."
"How can I guess? I don't know,"
she added in the same breath, laughing whilst he laughed.
"Mr. Scrooge."
"It was Mr. Scrooge. I passed his office window, and it was not shut up, and he had a candle inside. I could scarcely help seeing him and his partner. His partner lies upon the point of death, I hear. And there they were, sat alone. Quite alone in the world, I do believe.
Spirit. Oh, no, that's you, Sir Jeremy.
You little shit.
Hey, calm down.
I was literally about to open my mouth and you ruined it for me. I don't have to take a couple of seconds now to get back into the... Spirit,
said Scrooge.
Please remove me from this place.
I told you, these were the shadows of things that have been,
said the ghost.
They are what they are. Don't blame me.
Remove me,
said Scrooge.
Simply cannot bear this.
He turned upon the ghost, and seeing that it looked upon him with a face, in which some strange way there were fragments of all the faces it had ever shown him.
Leave me. Take me back. Haunt me no longer. Oof.
Little bit of a smaller performance, please, Jeremy.
If you ever try and give me notes on my acting, I will literally rip your legs off.
Oof. So aggressive. This was my idea. Okay, I brought you in and give you the title role out of the goodness of my heart. I should have been Scrooge, but I thought, you know what? Sir Jeremy Cream could be Scrooge. He might like the message, and he might take that and hold it with him in his heart.
Fuck off.
All right, boys, thank you. Come on, take him back to Scrooge's line, please.
Leave me. Please take me back. Haunt me no longer, Spirit.
In the struggle, if that can be called a struggle, in which the ghost led with no visible resistance on its own part, was disturbed by any effort of its adversary, Scrooge observed that the light was burning high and bright, and dimly connected that with its influence over him. He seized the extinguisher cap and by a sudden action pressed it down upon its head. The spirit dropped beneath it so that the extinguisher covered its whole form. But though Scrooge pressed down on it with all his force, he could not hide the light which streamed from under the thingy. Extinguisher. It's like a big... candle snuffer. Said that, didn't I? Light streamed under it from an unbroken floor. Flood upon the ground. Scrooge was conscious of being exhausted and overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, and further of being in his own bedroom. He gave the cap a parting squeeze in which his hand relaxed and... He gave the cap a parting squeeze in which his hand relaxed, and he had barely time to reel to bed before he sank into a heavy sleep. I don't understand, Cecil.
He put the extinguisher over the ghost, and then in a split second he was in his bedroom on his own, holding his hat.
Oh, right, that's it. That's the end of stave two.
Can we have a break for coffees and mackerel?
Okay. Have you got some macarons?
I assumed mackerel would be provided, as was my rider.
You what?
I told Cecil a lot of things I wanted to eat while I did this performance. Has someone got my neckerchief? My neck's getting curled. Oof.
Well, that's the end of that chapter. Bloody hell. The Radio Thax Players presents Dickens' Christmas Carol, narrated by Paul Thax, voices by Sir Jeremy Crean, Cecil Thax, Margaret Thax, Beryl Horrible, Tony Monondestry, Eugene Pent, and various others, maybe. But I don't think so, I think that's it. Thank you.